Hey, welcome back, everybody. It's time to grab your gear and ride along as we hop on board the e-bike revolution and talk with the entrepreneurs behind this movement and the love stories of those just riding along. Right here on the Pedego Podcast, brought to you by Pedego Electric Bikes. Well, week after week, I keep saying, we can't have any more of these. Come on, we're running out of stories here. And every week we find another one here. And this one is just as amazing as all the others we've told before. Today we're talking with Jeff Scanlon, who is the Pedego dealer up in Menlo Park, right?
That's right.
Welcome, Jeff, to the show here. So let me just look at this resume and see if I got any of this right, because I can't believe this, Jeff. I keep thinking I'm going to find guys. The only guys who sell bikes are guys that have been owning bike shops for 100 years. Wrong. I look at your story, and it's like so many others. According to what I'm looking at here, you held business development roles in several industries throughout your career, including hospital supplies, technology supply, chain management services, whatever that is, and financial services. All of which clearly set you up to do what? Open a bike shop?
I would say yes. I mean, there's a common theme there of being, you know, forward facing with customers or folks interested in what you might have to offer. And as I've always said, it, you know, you're always selling yourself or selling something. It might be a different product. It might be a different service, but the process should be the same.
So if the process is the same, tell me about the passion. Selling technology supply chain management services. I'm still not sure. What is technology supply chain management service? That's just different ways to measure supply chains through software?
Well, actually, we managed a supply chain for a software developer. So back in the day when software was not downloaded off the internet, but actually sold as a packaged product.
Oh, of course, yeah.
We were an outsourced supplier for software publishers, developers, where they had their actual, the software, which was on the old floppy disks. They had the physical manuals and all the packaging that it all went together in. And we essentially took the developer's masters, their software masters, their documentation masters, and put together finished product, and in some cases actually shipped their orders directly to their consumers.
There you go. You're taking me back. I forgot that technology once had a physical supply chain because they were physical things we used to buy and download. It wasn't just all done automatically over the internet here. All right. So then even along the way, most recently, I'm told you served as a nonprofit executive for both local and national nonprofit organizations. Anyone we can name here, or are we just going to stay anonymous here? Anything? What was that like, and where? How did that happen?
So back in 2008, the big financial downturn, I was actually in the financial services world, and that got upended decided that was not the place for me. Took a couple years to do some independent work and some consulting projects and pivoted into the nonprofit space, originally with the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, a national organization dedicated to blood cancer research.
My late father had leukemia, so I'm very familiar with that, yes. All right, so all of this sounds very tech, very organizational, very high-powered, lots of moving parts. And now the only moving parts you're dealing with are a chain and a bike. What's that like? Is that a big change in your life? And if so, is it a good one? Does it feel good to be out, I don't know, changing tires and repairing bicycle chains and getting people up on a bike and riding around?
Feels great. I've been riding bikes nearly 60 years myself, going back to my childhood. And so bikes have always been a passion for me. Owning my own business, being running a bike shop, owning a bike shop had not been in my past. And it wasn't until my wife actually bought an e-bike and came home one night and said, Jeff, as the nonprofit career was changing up, she looked at me and over dinner and said, we need to open a bike shop, or better yet, you need to open e-bike shop.
And you after you spit out your food and dropped your wine, what did you say?
That's a great idea. And 6 months later, I did.
Oh, my goodness. So because I've heard this over and over again, we've had people who are literally Wall Street bond traders. We had a guy who was an airline pilot for a major airline. We've had people who were bank executives, bank presidents in some cases. And all of them talk about the fun and difference of owning your own mom and pop business as opposed to being part of a massive organization. Talk about that changeover, because I would think it would be very different than handling supply chain management or nationwide nonprofit organizations. Got to be very different. You're in the neighborhood.
I'm in the neighborhood, but it's other than getting somewhat acclimated to the ups and downs of retail sales throughout the week and not knowing what's going to walk through your front door in any given day.
Right.
Managing a business, managing a budget is not far off from what I did in my professional career. I mean, it comes down to, you know, being wise with your money, figuring out a business plan and on the front end, and being smart with your money and determining, you know, what's going to be needed the most and just go for it. I mean, at some point in time, you got to make the decision, hey, this is what I really want to do. You just got to jump in and do it.
But it's your business on the line. And that must be satisfying and scary at the same time here. You're not following the national nonprofit rules or the supply chain something here. You know, it's your business. It's what you make of it. It's how you do it. And that's got to be a different feeling. And I would think, again, I'm putting words in your mouth, but I would think it would be both scary and satisfying.
It's really rewarding. And yeah, it's a bit scary at times, but that's where, you know, hopefully bringing all the experience to bear in other careers that you've had and other jobs that you've had, you know, makes a difference. And it does bring it much closer to home. You're not working with someone else's money or managing a budget with someone else's money. You're
right.
Managing that budget with your own money. And that's where I think personal satisfaction comes really into play.
And what do you think about the Pedego model? Pedego took this crazy idea of not just peddling their bikes to other bike shops or peddling them to big box retailers or just sending them straight to the consumer and having them figure it out. They went back to this old-fashioned notion of having standalone dedicated dealers. And it's not a franchise. It's an independent arrangement. It's like a licensing thing, as I understand it. But it's still there. You've got somebody to support and stand behind you. Maybe not as much as a full franchise, but more than just, hey, I'm going to rent a thing and see how this works.
I love the model. I did my research, obviously, before jumping into this as a career. And I realized I didn't want to just open up another bike shop and be one of, you know, a million.
Right.
And that be at the bottom of the chain in terms of support. Every interaction I had with anyone at Pedego while I was exploring this, you know, opportunity and trying to put together the pieces to see if it made sense for me, every single interaction was incredibly positive. It just said to me, there's a culture here that they want their dealers to succeed.
It's not just a catchphrase.
It's not just a slogan. And there were a few little incidents along the way that really underscored that. I could tell, you know, what the culture of the company was and how they supported their dealers and customers. And those little incidents along the way, all positive, just continued to reinforce how I felt about the model and the fact that I felt that this was the right partnership.
I'll give you a strange comparison. Maybe I'm getting too personal. I'm supposed to be just the host here, but my late father was an executive for Chrysler Corporation. One of the things he did was he was in charge of dealer relations for Chrysler. Big job, way back in the 60s and early 70s. And he saw the transition where they went from all the car companies, went from a dedicated dealer, you sold Chryslers, you sold Chevys, you sold Cadillacs, to they sold everything. And he said, that'll be the death of the car business because you're not all in. You're just got a bunch of brands. And the car companies won't have the same connection. Well, you've got 12 other brands on the floor. You're not that important to me here. Both from a company perspective and from the dealer perspective. Do you think that's true? The fact that you're just Pedego dealers, does that create a different bond and a different connection than if you had 20 bikes in your shop?
Oh, of course. Of course. I mean, I think first and foremost for the dealer, it certainly simplifies things.
Yeah.
I mean, to have to have relations with, you know, so many different vendors and know all that product. For someone just jumping into a bike store for the first time or the bike industry in terms of owning a store, I've always lived by the creed, hey, keep it simple. Why make things more difficult than they need to be?
Right.
And aligning yourself with a strong national brand with a great reputation, great product, and that attitude of wanting to support their dealers, you know, as much as they could, it just made sense to go that direction than, again, jump in with...
Then do it yourself and just try and figure it out and add a bunch of brands. Because there's some appeal that I'm going to cover my bets. I'm going to have every brand, high, low, and medium. I'm going to have everything under the sun. But then you're just, I'm not trying to pick on Costco or anything, but you're just a big box retailer. You got everything there. And then when you call up, I'm guessing again, I've never been in that situation. You know, I don't know how excited Costco is when somebody who's selling to a big box store gets a call. They send their rep out, but you're one of a million products on the floor there. But when your dedicated dealer calls up, they took the phone. They talk to you, right?
Absolutely.
All right. So you jumped in. Now you're a bike dealer. And where did you do this? You did this in Menlo Park. That's a pretty cool, techie area there. That's outside of Stanford, isn't it?
Yeah, literally about a mile from the edge of campus. Menlo Park borders Palo Alto just to the north, and literally the campus is about a mile south of my store. So, you know, it's not a heavily tourist area. It's certainly very business focused and right in the heart.
Exactly.
Of technology.
That's what I'm getting at here, because we've had lots of people on from, I don't know, pick some Myrtle Beach or Huntington Beach or whatever. And you think, I get it, because they're going to rent the bikes and then people are going to buy them. And there's a million of it's resorts. It's people out playing and stuff. This is pretty serious high tech environment around there. Is it any different being an e-bike dealer in Menlo Park than it is in Daytona Beach?
Oh, I'm sure it would be, not having ever lived or done business in Daytona Beach. I'm not sure what that, you know, I can guess what the vibe is like, but yeah, it's different. I've lived and done business in the Bay Area for 30 plus years. And, you know, people they're incredibly well educated. They do their homework. They're very learned when they're walking the door.
They don't just walk and say, I'll take one of those. Yeah, right.
Well, yeah, they're just not opening up their wallets necessarily. But for the most part, they've done their homework, or they will do their homework. And I might be the first stop of a few, but and in the same case, because of all that, sometimes it might make the sales process a little bit more difficult, if you will, or a little bit more challenging, because they will spend their time, but
they're going to go online. They're going to research. They're not just going to get caught up in the emotion and say, oh, let's get one of these, honey. I mean,
they do value that in-person and neighborly contact. And I can't tell you how many people of my customers in a little over a year have explicitly said, you know what, I know we could buy these things anywhere, but I want to have a local dealer that I can walk in the store and get what I need, ask the questions I need. So
I hear you. And I think that's the surprising. So many times when I first heard this story, I said, they're opening up dealers. I thought dealers are all going out of business. Nobody wants the direct brick and mortar stores. But at the same time, do I want to buy this over the internet? I don't know. I got nobody to refer to. It's the technology model that you were in on this for a long time. I think technology has created a distance from the customers. It's a do-it-yourself, self-service, download it, set it up, and try and get somebody on the phone at Microsoft or try and get somebody on the phone at any of these technology companies. They really don't want to talk to you.
Right. So here's just the antithesis of that.
Yeah.
I think they appreciate it.
I think they do. I think it's the yin and the yang. You know, we've gone so far in one way, the do-it-yourself model, that we're hungry for somebody who really has knowledge, who really is there to support us. And this is a product that needs periodic maintenance and whatnot. And the idea, what I found appealing, I'm sorry, I'm gushing about this, but I just think it's so obvious now. I didn't see it at first, is that you can try it. Before you buy it, I can't try all that technology anymore. Believe me, I tell the funny story of, I think it was, I shouldn't call them out, but Salesforce or something. Like, I wanted to try it for my own business. And of course, they won't let you try before you buy. And if they do, they make it miserable. They call you every 5 seconds and, you know, and I said, just let me play with it and see if I can work. This is a product you can try before you buy, right?
Absolutely. It's a big part of the whole ecosystem, the whole process. Absolutely. And people appreciate that, because it's no longer it's not like buying a pair of jeans, you know.
No.
It's a big investment. And it takes some time and it takes some commitment on the part of the customers. So if you can give them the opportunity to really feel comfortable before they make that decision, I think it's the absolute best thing to do, because the last thing I want to do is sell a bike just to sell a bike.
Right.
And then have someone come back a week later and say, what was I thinking?
Yeah.
You know, I should have gotten on this. This is not for me. That's not a situation I want to have.
No. With a customer. Yet when you sold hospital supplies, I don't think you walked into the giant hospital and said, try this. Just see what you think here and try it before you buy it or something. Maybe you gave them a few samples, but or financial services. Oh, let's just try and see how this works for a while here. We are supposed to do our research and then make a commitment to something and then stick with it. And I think so often we would all benefit if we could just try it before we buy it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So here you are. You've moved from big business to mom and pop business. What's it like with your customers? When you sold hospital supplies, did somebody gush and come back into your store and say, that was so much fun. I love this stuff.
Hardly. No. I mean, yeah, you might have gotten a thanks along the way, but nothing like the feedback that I get from customers, you know, leaving with a bike or a couple bikes for, you know, for a husband and wife or girlfriend and boyfriend or brother and sister.
Do whatever. They come back and talk to you? Because I hear over and over again, you've now got a relationship with these people. They're going to stop in and say, I'm having so much fun. Hey, I got a question about this. And even more, you're going on rides with them. You take these people on rides to different places?
Yeah, so it was a little bit of a startup process for me. I didn't jump into the group rides initially, but over the last, I'm going to say, 3 or 4 months, we've moved into a monthly group ride. We set the third Sunday of every month, so people kind of have it in their, you know, back in their brain on their calendar. People are loving it. They're enjoying it. And I think once the weather improves even more, we're going to get more people out every month.
And I always say, when I bought my Kia car, they hoped they'd never see me again. I mean, they hoped I'd refer somebody to them, but they don't want me just to come and hang out and say, I'm having so much fun with my Kia. We'd all get together and take a Kia ride through the city here. This is a different sort of product, a different sort of process. So out of this, you created something called, or maybe you're donating towards, I don't know what your involvement is, in the Silicon Valley Bicycle Coalition. What the heck is that?
Yeah, they're an organization that, while they're based in Silicon Valley, they engage with folks in the community up fairly, almost all the way up into San Francisco. And they're dedicated to increasing the use of bicycles in the area and moving more and more people onto bikes, enjoying bikes for lots of different reasons. They're there to promote more and more bike usage through, you know, safety awareness campaigns, group events, promoting increased access for bicyclists to certain, you know, geographic parts of the Bay Area. It's a local advocacy group, if you will, for bicycles.
And how are they doing? Because I would think in that sense, you'd be way ahead of everybody. I have people from other parts of the country and they're like, well, we're still car culture. We're still, bikes aren't a big part of our urban environment here. You're in a very urban environment. Are bikes in the Silicon Valley, is that bike culture? I would think it would be, because they're cutting edge. Yeah.
It is, and it's becoming more so. I think, the one thing that's unfortunate about our geography is because land is so expensive and so tight, we don't have a lot of those dedicated bike and pedestrian trails only. They do exist, but they're not as prevalent as I would like to see or others would. And so oftentimes bicyclists are sharing, you know, the roads with cyclists.
Yeah.
And because of that, and with just the growth in population, there is more, you know, interaction between bikes and cars. But the cities and the municipalities in the area are doing more and more with increased bike lanes. They're taking back some of the streets, at least, you know, on the sides, mm-hmm. where they might have had two lanes of traffic or a lane of traffic and parking. They're reclaiming some of that space for dedicated cycling lanes. I mean, it doesn't come without, in some cases, a fight. Some of the communities don't want to give up their parking areas.
Absolutely.
But,
right.
I'd say, you know, the trajectory is to be more and more bike friendly.
And how do they feel about electric bikes? I would think this is the home of Tesla. This is the home of e-everything here. That seems to be the future of the auto industry is moving from Detroit to Southern California, then Orange County, oddly enough, or to the Bay Area. Suddenly it's becoming a tech product here. And that seems to be this California movement towards electrifying everything, I would think would bode well for e-bikes as well.
Yeah, it's interesting that having, as I said, lived in the area for 30 plus years, it feels like the adoption is not as fast as I would have thought jumping in.
Interesting,
but, again, the trajectory, I think, is in the right direction. And the more people experience e-bikes, you know, the greater the adoption's going to be. And certainly these folks know, given the high price of gas here in California.
Yeah, right.
And just, you know, the congestion and so forth on the streets, as they see more and more bikes, e-bikes out there, the adoption rate is going to continue to be very
getting
positive.
Us off fossil fuels, getting us moving in a healthier outdoor environment. I would think they'd be embracing it. But you're saying you've seen, you know, like everything, change comes difficult here. So you're up in this Bay Area. You're involved in a bicycle coalition that's trying to spread the message. What's it like on campus? Does that any market for you? Are students e-bike crazy? Because I had a bike at college. That's probably the last time I rode a regular bike.
There are a lot of e-bikes on campus. Interestingly enough, Stanford University being as deep-pocketed as it is, they have their own bike store. They actually will
sell. You're kidding.
They have a pretty significant bike infrastructure on campus. But I have sold some bikes to some students. Interestingly enough, I've sold two of our small little Element bikes, about the smallest bike we make, to a 6'4" and a 6'6" offensive lineman on the football team. And I had to customize them both a little bit, but they love them.
There's something about that product. I'm sorry to interrupt, but we've had this come up a couple of times. That product, for those who haven't seen it sort of looks like, I'm going to call it like an old BMX bike when I was a kid. You know, the little sort of stunt bikes, the very nimble kind of bikes, not the big beach cruiser or mountain bikes that I've seen popularized. It's a smaller, more nimble kind of little bike. And when they had me ride all the bikes, because I'd never been on any of these bikes, I thought I was going to go, I'm 6'4". I thought I was going to go for one of those big monster bikes. I got to have the biggest, baddest bike there is. And that's the one that caught my eye. I don't know what it is about that. What is it about that little nimble little, is it just fun? Is it just nimble?
It's fun. As you said, it's very nimble with the wider tires. You know, you can be on pavement, off pavement. It's kind of a go anywhere bike.
Yeah. Right.
It's the right price point for the student.
Yeah. Right.
Although I'm sure some family members, some parents would wish it was at a lower price point.
Oh, yeah. But, well, nothing's $100 anymore. We all want everything to go back to when I was a kid here. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's just a fun bike. And given the size of it with that powerful motor on it, those things haul. They really move. And
we had a guy who compared it to his old, remember, you're probably an old one, remember the Stingray bikes that I used to have as a kid with the high handlebars and the banana seat and all that kind of stuff. What he thought it reminded him of, that kind of thing.
I wish I'd bought one back in the 60s and hung on to it.
Don't we all? It'd be worth a fortune here. All right, so here you are in the epicenter of the high-tech world, Silicon Valley. Is there any more exciting place to be? And of course, e-bikes in Silicon Valley. It just seems like a natural combination here. Where do you think this goes? Is this a phenomenon that people are going to ride in, I don't know, the Great Plains and the Great North? Or is it just beaches and tech areas and cool areas and trendy areas? I don't know. Is it going into the whole population? What do you see up there?
I think it will.
It's early. Again, it's not there yet. Right.
But it's not there yet. And, you know, as a country, the U.S. is far behind other, you know, countries around the world.
I hear that all the time. You go around the Asian
adoption,
stuff.
But
yeah. Right.
As with anything, the more prevalent things become, the more aware people are of them. Certainly, in more more suburban and more urban areas, there's going to be, I think, greater adoption. But in rural areas, you know, that people are looking maybe more for recreation out there as opposed to a commuting bike. I think, again, the more prevalent e-bikes become, the greater the adoption will be.
We had somebody on from Fort Worth, and they were laughing about somebody who takes his e-bike fishing with him, and he's got a little propane tank, and he cooks the fish right out in the field there. We had somebody on from, not Flagstaff, somebody in Arizona, Tucson or Tempe or someplace like that, Tucson, I think. And ranchers taking them because they can go farther and out in places that even the horse can't go. Oh, they're in Houston, they were talking about cops using them for crowd instead of horses, using e-bikes to get around and stuff here. It seems like there's a bigger movement happening here. It's not just a trendy few, and it's not just aging baby boomer, although that's a big part of it, I think. Who's buying the e-bikes up in Pedego Menlo Park?
Well, as I'm sure you know, Pedego targeted the boomer market when they launched, and that's certainly been, I think it continues to be the majority of bike owners. But as our product line expands and, you know, with the introduction of the Element, that small little 20-inch mm-hmm. wheel bike we were just talking about, while it is an adult-sized frame, teenagers are buying them. And I think with some of the other products that are in the pipeline, new products, the company recognizes that they perhaps now are missing an important, you know, segment of society. And so some of these new products, I think, are going to fall right in line with a younger generation and appeal to a broader swatch of the population than we do right now.
So I run a radio station here that's based at the University of California, Irvine's Applied Innovation Center. And we'd done some show on cutting edge technology, and that's how I met Don way back when. And he told me about this dream, this vision. This is years ago. And I thought, a few, maybe. But come on, everyday people aren't going to do it. And they're expensive and everything else, or more expensive than a regular bike. And now, oh my goodness, at least here in Orange County, I know lots of baby boomers I know personally have one or want one. Where they never even heard of them 5-10 years ago, and even more so, their kids, particularly like teenagers and stuff. Everywhere I go, in my neighborhoods, where did this all happen? So there seems to be, we're kind of at a tipping point, I think, where suddenly adoption is taking off in a different direction than I think anybody could have imagined here.
I agree, and I think, you know, getting back to just the culture of the Pedego and the community that it builds with its customers and the dealers, it's rare to see single individual buy a single bike, and that's the last you see of them.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
It's the first parent or the first adult. They get it. They love it. Their family around them, their friends around them have a chance to ride it. They love it. And you start seeing now families with 2, 3, 4 bikes or
yes.
a group of friends adopting them all. So
that's what I'm saying. It's something's taken off. I think we're at that moment. 5 years from now, it's going to look a lot different. In the last 5 years, it's looked a lot different, where now people know what it is and are aware of it, and you're starting to see it. It's not rare to see an e-bike. 5-10 years ago, it was rare to see an e-bike right. anywhere here. Well, the last quote I'm going to leave you with is one that apparently was on your site somewhere here, and they shared it with me. It's a quote that you said where you talked about working for charitable organizations, and you said something like, "Nonprofit organizations deliver critical services to large segments of our country's population whose needs would otherwise go unmet." I wonder if you're not still on the same mission selling e-bikes here.
I'm on a similar mission. Different market segment, but the same mission.
Critical services being offered to large segments of the population whose need would otherwise go unmet. I just thought, I smiled and I thought, maybe it's not such a strange. Maybe you haven't gone down a different path. You've just done it in a different way here. Well, I think it's an amazing story. What would you say to anybody thinking about opening an e-bike store? Is this the time to get in?
Don't wait. Jump in. Do it.
The water's fine. The ride's good. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for sharing it. How do we reach you at Pedego Menlo Park if people want to come up? When I'm up at Stanford at some giant symposium or whatever, looking at that beautiful campus, I got to come by and check out your store here.
Please, yeah. PedegoMenloPark.com. You go to my website. You can find the phone number as well, or initiate a chat session through my website. So would love to see you. And yeah, you could walk. If you're on Stanford campus, you could walk to my store.
I have to smile. You're the first dealer that's ever come on to tell their story that said, initiate a chat. You're in Silicon Valley. Only in Silicon Valley would they say, let's initiate a chat. Everybody else is like, call me. Here's my phone number here. It's the world you're in. It's the future. It's happening right now up there. Pentago.
I'm not going to ask somebody to remember 10-digit phone numbers.
So. Not anymore. Exactly. Let's start a chat. I just smile. All right. Pentago Menlo Park. We're talking with the guy who's pedaling along up there, Jeff Scanlon. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Paul.
Well, there you have it. One more example of the crazy world that's happening out there. The people driving this e-bike revolution. The love stories of those riding along each and every week here on the Pedego Podcast. Brought to you by Pedego Electric Bikes. For more information, simply visit pedego.com and check out all the dealers like Pedego Menlo Park.